26 Parsha, we have Parshas B'Shalach, and also the Shabbos is a special Shabbos. Besides being Shabbos Shira, because of Parshas B'Shalach, it's also Tu B'Shvat on the Jewish calendar. Tu B'Shvat Yigia, Chag HaIlanot. Tu B'Shvat is actually here. I'd like to dedicate today's Parsha's discussion to both a very important idea from the Parsha that relates certainly to Tu B'Shvat, which is coming upon us. Let's begin with the beginning of the Parsha. Parsha begins, Vayi B'Shalach, what's the next word? Paro. Vayi B'Shalach Paro Esam. The obvious question is, if I were to ask you, who was the one who should be least responsible for sending B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, who would you say it is?
Paro.
Hashem took B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, for sure. Paro? He gets credit for sending B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? That's very, very strange. Hard to understand. Paro? Vayi B'Shalach Paro Esam. So the Medrash, at the beginning of this parasha, picks up on this point. It says the following thing. You know what the word B'Shalach means? Says the Medrash. B'Shalach Shiluach Hazeh Livoya. It means escorted. Paro escorted B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. As it says in Parashas, Vayera of Avram Holech Imam L'Shalcham. Avram escorted the angels when they came to visit him. Says the Medrash, V'lama Pasach HaKasuv B'lash Nazeh. Why does the Pasach begin? Vayi B'Shalach Paro, that Paro escorted B'nai Yisrael. Hapesha Amar Lo Ashaleach, the same mouth that said, "I'm not sending B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim." Chazav Amar Anochi Ashaleach Eschem. Same mouth said, "I'll send them out." Lekach Pasach Vayi B'Shalach. That's why it begins with Vayi B'Shalach. Umascharo, and where is the reward that's given to Paro for actually escorting B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim? Says the Medrash, Lo Titaev Mitzri. The pasuk says in Parashas Kisetze, you're not allowed to hate or to mistreat an Egyptian. In fact, we're even allowed to marry Egyptians, a Mitzri, which is a very, very strange idea. Mitzrayim have a certain warm spot, a soft spot in our hearts for Mitzrayim. Various different reasons are given to it, but the Medrash says one reason, because Paro escorted B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Wow. This is a wonder. Paro escorts B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, and he gets credit for it for eternity. So much so that the Mitzrayim are left with a soft spot for us in our hearts for them because of Paro escorting B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. Paro is the worst. Paro HaRasha. That's what we call him. The little kids, when they start singing, there was a wicked king. His name was Paro. Everyone knows Paro is a Rasha. And Paro here is given schar, reward, for escorting B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. What is the pshat here? So I saw a very nice insight that I like to use as a springboard to talk about other things in this parasha as well, which is the following idea. True, Paro is bad. Paro is a Rasha. But every single person we know is created with two sides to them. We have a physical side to us, and there's also a spiritual side to us as well. There's the tzad ha-chomri, the physical side of us, and the tzad ha-ruchni. Paro was certainly focused on the physical. Paro was certainly into himself, full of himself. I made the Yor, the Yor is all mine. I'm the man, so to speak. But there's also, kanireh, seemingly some small part of Paro that jumped out and said, you know what? There's something special about these people. I'll take them out, I'll escort them. There's something good about B'nai Yisrael also. And for that small little amount, which was even maybe because he was punished and there were so many makos that were given to him and it was so hard for him, but for that little minuscule amount that Paro had, that feeling of gratitude and of recognition of who B'nai Yisrael is, Paro was rewarded and for generations to come. This is the idea that I saw the name of the Or Yahil, one of the very, very fine Bali Musri suggests, which you see from here, the tremendous, tremendous potential that man has. Paro, who's Paro Arasha, we're not going to make Paro into a tzaddik, we're not going to deny his terrible existence of who he was, but at the end of the day, there was something good deep down inside of Paro, something somehow that justified some part of his existence, and the Torah gives him a reward for that for eternity. And Lo Sisaev Mitzri, I can't even hate a Mitzri because of Paro, because Paro scored a B'nai Yisrael of Mitzrayim. Okay. We'll call the Shmuz a bit of contrasts. At the very end of the parasha, we skip from the first pasuk to the last psukim. Who's at the end of the parasha? Who got through Shtayim Mikra? Who's at the end? Come on. It's almost Purim. Who's at the end of the parasha? Very good. Amalek. Amalek's in the parasha. They come and they fight against Bnei Yisrael. And the Torah says, you know what you're supposed to do to Amalek? Wipe them out. And have no mercy. Zero. Midor dor. The left words of the parasha are midor dor. From generation to generation. Why? Why are we so harsh on Amalek? A very, very good philosophical question. And what the kids do, and what the women do, and why are we so harsh on Amalek? And the answer is what the Torah is trying to address and tell us the following. There's potential for good and potential for bad. Paro was not a great person, but he was able to pull out some of the good potential. There was something redeeming about Paro's behavior. There was something good about Paro that warranted a little bit of Los Saif Mitzri. As opposed to Amalek, who was so bad, like the Torah describes, Velo Yirei Elokim, and they're just out to get us when we're on top. There was potential for bad, and that potential was so much maximized for the bad that Paro has nothing, that Amalek, I'm sorry, has nothing redeeming about it. Midor dor destroy Amalek. So we have extremes. The first part of the parasha, Paro, something redeeming about him. He escorts Bnei Yisrael out. End of the parasha, Amalek, disaster. How low can man go? Amalek is as low as man can be. Two extremes in the parasha. I want to just bring it a little closer to the parasha. A little more of the parasha. Who's the hero of the parasha? Who's the hero? Who? Good man. I'll go with Nachshon. He's not found in the Torah in this week's parasha. He's found earlier in Sefer Shmos when he marries Elisheva, but he's not found in the parasha. But the Medrash says that the water was just waiting to split, and Bnei Yisrael is not going in. How does it split? We know the Medrash tells us, and the Medrash goes on to great detail to describe what happened. The Bnei Yisrael is not going in, and Nachshon says, I'm going in. He goes in, the water comes to his legs, and to his knees, and to his waist, and to his chest, and to his mouth, and to his nose. And finally he screams out with the last breath that he has inside of him, the water has come to, I'm going to die. And all of a sudden, Yam splits, Yam kriyas, Yam, so Bnei Yisrael walks through. Hero. Unbelievable. He wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu, he wasn't Aaron HaKohen, he was a regular quote-unquote person in Klal Yisrael. And because of him, there's Kriyas Yamsuf, unbelievable maxing of potential, maximizing of potential. And then we have another extreme. Who are the two people in this week's parasha and in many parashas in the Torah that get a lot of fame for their ability to mess things up? Who are they? Dustin and Aviram. They creep up everywhere where there's trouble in Klal Yisrael, they creep up. In Shmos, they creeped up. They creep up over here again. Mun comes. Wow. Can you imagine Mun? Mun. Imagine Larry's pizza for lunch today and tomorrow you get Big Apple pizza and the next day you get Trevi's pizza. Life is good. Different pizzas in the Mun. Gewaldig. And two characters come and what do? Everything is great for Klal Yisrael. Wow. The Midbar, Mun, whatever you want. And they come. It's one condition. Friday, Lecha Mishnah, Shabbos, nothing comes. Comes these two characters, and we know they spread out on Shabbos food. Ah, look, the man is here, and that's why we know there's a minhag, a questionable minhag, whether we're supposed to feed the birds on Shabbos Shira, not feed the birds. Nice discussion, nice halachic point, not for now. But you find the same idea. Potential for greatness, Nachshon ben Nadav, and potential for destruction, for bad. Just using the potential that you have and saying, you know what, everything is great, let's destroy it, let's ruin it. Let's amalek it. So you have Paro on one extreme who's able to find the potential inside of him versus Amalek. And you have Nachshon who literally maximizes potential to the most amazing ability. And Dustin and Aviram will take potential and they squander and they destroy. Why is this relevant to Tu B'Shvat? Tu B'Shvat Higia. Look outside. My father told me last night, and I'll make the people from America feel a little good. My father told me last night he was sitting in his car in Washington Heights at, you know, it must have been the afternoon for him. He said it was absolutely frigid outside. He said it was 16 degrees outside. I said, Abba, sorry, it's like 65 degrees here. Sunny, beautiful. He was happy. It's nice. Tu B'Shvat, it's usually in the middle of the winter. Okay, Israel, the winter sometimes looks like it does outside. It's a beautiful sunny day today. But Tu B'Shvat's in the middle of the winter, usually. Tu B'Shvat in Eretz Yisrael. And it's Chag L'Ilanot. Why? What are we celebrating? What's happening? What's happening to the world of, to the trees on Tu B'Shvat? The answer is the sap that's inside the tree is coming up into the tree, and the budding, the first budding of the fruits are happening now. First budding. We're not celebrating per se the actual fruits, the harvest of the fruits, bringing the fruits into the house, enjoying the fruits. That's much later on, it's the summertime. We celebrate and we recognize on Tu B'Shvat the most incredible, important message for us in our lives, which is that of potential. A tree, one tree, has endless potential. Orange tree. One little seed goes into the ground. Maybe two seeds, I don't know, one seed. You plant it, you water it, you cultivate it, and all of a sudden, becomes a little bush, grows a little higher tree, and you have thousands and thousands of oranges from one tree, from one seed. Wow, what an incredible potential exists in the trees that HaKadosh Baruch created. It's unbelievable, it's limitless, endless. And that's one year. And then it can lose its fruit. It'll be gone for some time. It'll come right back year after year after year. Thousands and thousands, nourishing millions of people, could come just from one tree. One tree. The potential that exists in the world of nature that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created is endless and limitless. It's unbelievable. I'm not a farmer, so why do I care about this? Here's the reason. The reason is because the Torah says in Parashat Shoftim, Ki ha'adam eitz hasadeh. Man is like a tree. What does that mean, man is like a tree? I'm tall like a tree? Mr. Hecht is tall. But I'm short. So he's like a tree and I'm like a bush. What does this mean? What's the idea? So the answer is the following. A lot of similarities between man and tree. I don't want to go into all of them. But one clear similarity between the two of them is the most incredible potential that exists in man. Endless potential. We are potential machines. God made so much potential in each one of us. The problem is sometimes we don't realize how much potential we have. I'm zocha, Baruch Hashem, to have children. And I have a range of kids. My oldest is almost 14 and my youngest is not even 2. I remember when my first one was born, and I remember how she was that age. Now I see a little 2-year-old kid almost running around, making trouble, doing terrible twos things. And you realize, you recognize, you know what? You know, 2 years ago, he was a little baby, less than 7 pounds, being held in his arms. And now he's growing, he's almost 2 bliyanara. And a little 14-year-old girl is going to high school next year, Mitzvah Hashem. She also was a little nothing that came, and bliyanara, look where she is right now. And that's just a small cross-section of one little family in one little house in Rabbi Shemesh in Israel. That's enormous potential. What's in this room? How much potential is in this room right now? How much potential koach is there in every single one of us in this room right now? It's unbelievable. I want to share with you a beautiful story that I saw on the van on the way to Yeshiva today. It was a 14-year-old boy who was orphaned very, very young. And he went to Yeshiva to learn. He got to Yeshiva and he began learning Yeshiva. And his family decided they needed him to come back and to work for the family because there was no money in the family. They came to the yeshiva. He was learning the yeshiva Slabodka, a very, very famed chashav yeshiva back in Europe. And he was 14 years old, again orphaned. They came to the Rosh Yeshiva, the Saba of Slabodka. They said, "We have to take our brother back. We need him to work. We want to send him to dental school, become a good dentist. Let's send him to dentistry. He'll be a great dentist." The Saba was very smart. The Rosh Yeshiva was very smart. Said the following, "Give me 3 weeks. 3 weeks from yeshiva. Come back in 3 weeks. And if he wants to go then, if he'll take it, if you can get him to go then, you know, fine. 3 weeks is fine." Family left. The Sabbath put the best guys in the yeshiva with this boy, this young boy. And he learned in a few weeks what a person could usually accomplish in much more amount of time, in maybe months, maybe even a year. He pounded it and he was so focused. They came back 3 weeks later and said, "Okay, here we go, dental school, we're going to dental school, come." He was 14, he was young. So this young boy looked at him and said, "Who? What? What are you talking about? I'm here, I'm set, I'm staying put." And they tried this, that, they tried to get, I'm not going anywhere. What was this young boy's name, this 14-year-old boy's name? What was his name? His first name was Aaron. And his second name was Cutler. And he became Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Why is that name so meaningful to us? I never learned in Lakewood Yeshiva. But you know what? If there wasn't a Lakewood Yeshiva, there probably would not be a day school anywhere in America. When Avraham came to America and he set up yeshivos in America, it was a major, major battle. He was fighting against everything, and there were wars waged. And because Avraham Cutler became Avraham Cutler and tapped into his unbelievable potential, we are all here today. That's a fair statement to me. Besides us, the thousands and thousands of students he inspired in Lakewood and beyond the entire world, Chinuch Atzmai in America, all stem from Avraham Cutler, all because he was a person who recognized, and thank God to his Rabbeim also, tapped into the unbelievable potential that he had. In this sefer over here, which I love, Alim Shabbat, he points out, can you imagine he would have gone to Shemayim after 80 years? He would say, hi, Professor Aaron Cutler, how do you do? Great. Wow, you clean a lot of those teeth. And you were a very good dentist. But where's the sperm called Mishnas Rabbi Aaron that you should have written? And he said, what? Mishnas who? Mishnas what? Mishnas who? I don't know what you're talking about. And they said, what do you mean? This is what you could have done. This is what you could have been. But instead of could have been that person, he became that person. Because he tried to use every single gift that God granted him, and he maxed out on his great potential that Hashem gave him. This is a message, a very important message, I think, from Parshas B'Shalach, when we saw all these extremes. Paro, Amalek, Nachshon, Dasan and Aviram, Tu B'Shvat, recognizing potential. We are a tremendous amount of potential. Hashem should give us all koach to look in ourselves, recognize the great potential that we have, and hopefully please God to actualize that potential and to make ourselves into the best people that we can be. Have a great Shabbos.